Welcome to New Realities. I'm Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about the evolution of our consciousness and who we are evolving into as conscious, realized beings. And that also has to do with how we deal with our emotional content, what it is in our reality that we need to be at peace with. And that's why tonight's guest is so important, Dr. Friedman Schaub, who has written the book, The Fear and Anxiety Solution. He is a physician specializing in cardiology and molecular biology, and he's helped thousands of people overcome fear and anxiety with this particular breakthrough method. Welcome to the program, Friedman.
Thank you very much for having me.
I think it's so important to help people shift out of an old way of thinking, not just about the world, but about their lives. And that's why I do this program, to open up people to new ideas about what's possible for themselves. So, because so many people are stuck in a pattern of thinking and anxiety, and they don't know how to get out of it. So let's cover some of these ways in this program, okay?
Right, absolutely, yes.
So, in your book, you kind of go through what's happening. But let's just, you want to start with the subconscious mind as it overviews the world and makes reactions for us? Or where would you like to start?
Yeah, you know, I think the subconscious mind is such a misunderstood and underappreciated part of our consciousness. It's always makes me happy to be able to talk about it, because I learned to really, value what the subconscious mind can do for us and how it can be an integral part of our healing, but also of our personal growth. And as you said, the evolution of consciousness. We need to have the subconscious mind on our side in order for us to move forward. And that's also true when it comes to overcoming fear and anxiety.
But first, tell us, what is the subconscious mind? Because everyone's heard about it, but I don't think anyone really knows what it is or how you're going to use that definition. So,
well, I like to look at the subconscious mind as that deeper part of our mind. And, the analogy of the iceberg may be familiar to some of the listeners, that the conscious mind is that little tiny piece that is looking out above the water. That's what we are so, more or less aware of. And then the bigger part of our consciousness is the subconscious mind. And bigger because it just covers so many more jobs and aspects of our lives and our conscious mind. I mean, whatever you do on a daily basis, 80% has been regulated and controlled by the subconscious mind, and that's quite powerful.
Well, let me just ask you, so we're aware of a much bigger reality through our subconscious mind, but we've been conditioned and trained by our culture, really, to see only the tip of the iceberg. Is that
that's
it?
Right. Absolutely. And it has a lot to do with the fact that, what we can intellectually understand has been, more and more valued, and even our emotions. I mean, we don't really learn how to deal with our emotions anymore. We try to suppress them. We try to get rid of them. We find them inappropriate and rely so heavily on our intellect and our rational mind, versus really understanding that our emotions do have a purpose and they are actually very important to listen to. And so the subconscious is the creator of our emotions. And we know this because often our emotions intellectually don't seem to make sense. You're on your way to work, it's Monday morning, nothing really in your life is really wrong, but for some reason you're anxious.
I mean, let's just start there. What would that be about? I'm on my way. Nothing's really wrong, but yet I'm feeling something. What's going on there?
Well, there can be a lot of things going on, but what often happens is that there is a part of your subconscious, a part of your consciousness, that deeper part that may associate with Monday that, well, this is dreadful, or there is a time again where I get judged or where I have to measure up. And what if I don't really measure up? What if I cannot really prove myself once again? You know, there are deep-seated beliefs on a subconscious level that we often act accordingly, but we don't really know consciously that we have them. You know, many people tell me, well, you know, I don't really have limiting beliefs, but I just know that I cannot really have what I want. And that's a limiting belief.
Well, actually, I think all beliefs are limiting if they're a belief. You know what I mean? We have to go beyond belief.
Yeah, but we can change limiting beliefs also into positive beliefs. I mean, we can, you know, this is part of the work that the book describes. We can certainly identify limiting beliefs and then change them and grow into beliefs that are actually promoting this growth and promoting us to be the bigger selves.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go back to work. We're on our way to work. We're having anxiety. That should be a key in for us that something is going on.
Yes.
Instead of saying, I shouldn't have this, you should start out by saying, okay, what's going on for me? Why do I have this feeling? Would you
exactly
start?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And what you can do is simply, you know, often it is a thought. You know, there are these automatic thoughts that are just popping in our mind from nowhere. Well, they come from the subconscious. And those thoughts can be so fast that at first glance, we don't really catch them. So just being aware of, okay, when I do have this pattern of Monday morning anxiety, what am I actually thinking? When does this anxiety start? And what was the thought I had right before it started? That gives you a lot of information right off the bat. Sometimes you don't have a thought, or you think you don't have a thought. And then you can also simply ask yourself, okay, so let's say, what's the feeling? Well, the feeling is anxiety. And then you just start with going further and say, I am anxious because, and just let the answer come up. And then you may get, I'm anxious because my colleagues. And then you just go further. I'm anxious because my colleagues, what? What am I anxious about? So when you actually do this, you put the phrase out and then you wait just a little bit. What's happening is that you start to communicate with the source of your anxiety rather than trying to just push it aside and ignore it. And just by paying attention to it and really understanding where it comes from, a lot of the anxiety will already be something that you feel more, you know, understanding and connected to, and then you can work with it. And this is what the book shows you how to.
So anxiety always has its roots in some type of situation. It's just not – people just aren't born with anxiety. Is that right?
Well, you know, that's something that is not quite right, because there are people that when we do work on a subconscious level have their anxiety imprints either in the womb – where, you know, I remember a client who was deadly afraid of water and he couldn't explain why. And when we went into a deep subconscious process, the memory that came crystal clear to his mind was that there was a fear of drowning, and that drowning occurred while he was in the womb with his mother. And when he later on went to his mother and asked, so did you actually have like a near drowning experience? And then she confirmed, she almost forgot. It was just one of those little things in the lake, and she got a panic, was underwater. It wasn't really that bad, but the emotion of the mother can be felt by the subconscious of that, you know, little being in the womb, and that had imprinted on him. And some people go even further than that, and they really feel and believe firmly that their anxiety had to do and was rooted in a past life.
Right. I was just going to ask you that. If it is, I mean, I don't know where you believe that, but could it be that our subconscious is then connected to our soul, which remembers all our experiences? Would you go that far in your therapies?
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, I'm You don't have to be a religious person to believe that there is more to us than, just our thoughts and our intellect. And the subconscious is, in my belief, an intercessor between that more higher consciousness or the soul and the intellectual part of our consciousness. And so, the subconscious certainly can bring a lot of information that we are bringing into these lifetimes with it. And, often it is something where people say, well, I don't really believe in past lives, so let's not even go there. And then, boom, when we do these processes, that's what comes up for them. And I tell them, the subconscious works metaphorically as well, just like in our dreams. So whether it is a subconscious or if it's a metaphor from the subconscious, doesn't really matter. The important thing is that we need to take this information serious, because anything the subconscious tells us has a purpose to it.
Right. And in your book, one of your seven steps for the resolution process is then to look at that from a higher perspective. What did this anxiety tell us about who we are, right? Is that what you go to?
Exactly. Absolutely. And, from a higher perspective, you are able to see the event, for example, that, early on started the pattern of anxiety, the pattern of protecting yourself, for example, by always making yourself smaller, or protecting yourself by always trying to be the best that, anybody around, so that you don't get judged or criticized. Whatever this is, from this higher perspective, you can see the pattern, you can understand what you need to learn, and you can release the pattern. And that's one of those really powerful tools to have with the subconscious mind, that when you understand that the subconscious stores all memories, on especially those memories that are charged with emotions like fear and anxiety, stores all those memories in patterns, and you understand that those patterns repeat themselves over and over again. Just working on one or two of the examples of those patterns, early examples, learning from them, and literally outgrowing them allows you to release decades of emotional baggage in a matter of minutes. And that's a big game changer for people, because they feel, finally, I have a clean slate. This past is not hanging over me anymore. I don't feel like trapped in my story. I have actually a much more open field to look at myself in a different light, and obviously also have grown from the past.
But let's go back to the title of your book, The Fear and Anxiety Solution. I think fear and anxiety, they seem like two different things. Anxiety seems more vague, but fear seems to be based on an actual situation. You know what I mean? The
I
difference
know,
between
you
those
know,
two.
absolutely. And there are definitely definitions that you can look up. But what I find interesting is that people then, when they use fear and anxiety, they may actually say, oh, I'm anxious of something very specific, and I'm afraid of, just life itself or something very vague. So I notice that people are more comfortable with one or the other, and that's why, because also they come from the same source, I just use them interchangeable.
Well, in a sense, I think, looking at this own question I put out there, I think fear is also projection. If someone told you your house was on fire, you wouldn't be afraid. You'd take action. There's fear is a result of a mental disconnect. Would you say that?
Well, I think most of our fears are fictional. Yes, there are some, real fears, but most people that have anxiety either base it upon something that happened in the past, and they feel like, well, what if this repeats itself again? Or they're basing it upon, that what they cannot control in the future, and therefore they're afraid of. But nothing of it has in this moment any relevance to it. It's very rare that we are really anxious or afraid because something in this moment is threatening us.
But what if we have a history? Let's say we've had serious family dramas. We've lost, parents, and those things stay with us. And you might go into the subconscious, but there's an an event, an orientation to reality that's just, you know, unchangeable. Or, I mean, maybe the orientation is changeable, but there's a reality that has existed, you know?
Absolutely.
What do you do with something like that?
Well, you know, the subconscious is based on the reality of what we experience. So most of the people I'm working with have some kind of a real experience in the past that for them is the root of their anxiety. You know, so what you need to do is to understand that there are three root causes, basically, that those events then later on, you know, make you more susceptible to be anxious and afraid. And those three root causes are the events themselves. So these are the significant emotional events where the emotion is still trapped in the memory. The second is that usually there is a part of our subconscious, especially from traumatic events, evolving as this inner protector. And what that means is, you know, keep in mind the subconscious has two major functions. One is to protect us, and the other one is pretty much to make us happy. And so if there is a threat or something confusing happening early in our lives, that inner protector emerges and has just basically one intention: to somehow keep us safe. And it finds, you know, some ways to do this. As I said, maybe it's a way to hide out, or it's a way to please. It's a way to be a chameleon, to be a, you know, perfectionist, whatever those things are. You probably know, when you have been able to identify this beginning of your anxiety, that there is a protective pattern that has like a red thread gone through your life until now. And the third root cause are these core beliefs, you know, beliefs that we are establishing very early in our lives that kind of try to make sense of the world and our position in the world. And so these beliefs can be like, I'm not good enough, or the world is not safe, or I cannot trust. Those beliefs are all anchoring your anxiety into your subconscious mind. And so you are naturally looking through the filters of the beliefs and the emotions and these inner parts that keep you protected, and distort the world according to, this is a dangerous place, this is a place where I'm not safe in, or this is where I'm not really belonging because I'm not good enough. But when you change all of those three root causes, your reality and your experience of your reality changes also.
But how do you change? Let's say you have an inner conflict, or you've been traumatized by an event in the world. You know, lots of people are in war. Yeah. They've seen awful things, and it's the conscious mind is affected, but it goes deep into the subconscious mind. And yes. How do you deal with that?
So what usually happens is that we are establishing, you know, there is always a balance in life. That's just, you know, there's an up and down, left and right. There is also a part that is anxious and tries to protect you. And usually there is a part establishing that is much more positive or confident, that moves you and drives you forward. So there is then an inner conflict between those two sides. And you, as the, you know, the observer, feel sometimes, you know, in the middle of a tug of war. Something is pulling you forward and says, hey, I want to advance in life. Yes, I want to trust again. Yes, I want to, you know, maybe have a promotion that works. So I'm going to work really hard. Another part of you holds you back and says, no, who do you think you are? You're just going to get hurt again and disappointed again, or whatever these messages are. So there is a process called the parts reintegration process, where you literally communicate with both sides of your subconscious mind, both sides of that inner conflict, and you go through various steps to identify where they come from, what they really, you know, want, and then also you identify that they ultimately have the same highest purpose. And the same highest purpose, it makes complete sense, because they come from the same source, they come from the same subconscious mind, they just have been split at some point due to whatever events, you know, made that inner protector emerge. But when you reconnect, go ahead.
Yeah. No, you reconnected how? No, that's the part I want to understand.
Well, once you realize that they both have the same highest purpose, and you made both sides realize that they have the same highest purpose, then you go into understanding that each side has also unique gifts to offer. And this is something that we often overlook. The anxious side of us is also the side of us that's most commonly is the sensitive side of us, the part of us that takes things more personally or is more looking out for potential danger. Now, sensitivity is not a flaw or a weakness. Sensitivity is actually a gift. There is a power behind it. And so if you then guide this part to realize that sensitivity is a wonderful awareness. It can lead to compassion, to understanding, to deeper connections. You, the formerly anxious side, can actually serve me very well and support me and support the other side to reach this higher purpose, which could be, as simple as just to have a fulfilling life. And then the other side has, of course, also some gifts and strengths, maybe courage or determination or whatever those things are that you identify. And you can see they are perfect fitting pieces to a puzzle, like the yin and the yang. They are just really made together for each other. And in that, you're changing on a subconscious level, basically, their job descriptions, so that they're in the future not fighting each other and pulling in opposite directions. They're actually working with each other. But this is a conscious,
But I
subconscious
still,
process. We cannot intellectualize it.
right. Yeah, no, I know we can. We have to do the actual process. But again, I'm just trying to understand the idea of like a post-traumatic stress syndrome where someone's been traumatized by a particular major life-threatening type of event, natural disaster or something. And then, well, two things happened when when I'm looking at post-traumatic stress. There's an amnesia where the mind blocked out the particular moment, and then there's an obsessive quality. I mean, Jung called it a disassociation. So there's a part that wants to remember. I think this is what you're saying, the obsessive part that can't let go of the event, and then there's a protective part that's blocked out the part that moment where the person was particularly threatened. You know, that's in severe cases. Do you know what I'm saying? Those two.
Absolutely, yes.
And
And
so how do you make yourself, how do you get to that place where you're conscious of the things that your mind wants you to forget in order to protect you, and also balance that obsessive part that needs to know?
well, that's something that I find is quite interesting about the subconscious mind. And I just got an email from a client today that she told me after just the first, conversation, the first session, where we are basically just, starting to see the map of the subconscious, the map of her life. All of a sudden, there were memories coming up that she wasn't even aware of the past. And I see this over and over again. And that's, for me, a sign that when we do actually learn to work with the subconscious mind and learn to speak the language of the subconscious mind, what happens is that the subconscious actually is realizing, okay, now it's a time to open up and let whatever we have suppressed or whatever, has been just stored somewhere deep down back to the surface. Because it takes a lot of energy to suppress memories. It takes a lot of energy to let trauma somehow linger in the depth. But when you are teaching your subconscious that you're willing to do the work and reconnect with the subconscious, what happens very often is that those memories are coming up as a sign of the subconscious, okay, now it's a time to do this. And so then the obsessive part that's looking for whatever there has been obviously is not as strong anymore, because now that what needs to be dealt with comes to the surface. And you are wondering, how does this integration work? Well, how the integration works is really by, you know, that's the beauty about the subconscious mind. So you have to imagine the whole setup is not that you're delving first into this integration work. You're leading yourself through working on your self-talk and so on to the point where you can actually see both sides and have a connection to both sides. So there is some preparation work for you to do. But once you're there, and once you realize that these two parts actually can complement each other and support each other, and that there is a higher purpose for you than just to survive and be safe, and all of those things are, you know, coming into a greater awareness and a more visceral feeling, you ask each side, are you willing to now connect, reconnect, and pursue this higher purpose and support each other rather than fighting each other? And you hear then from both sides a yes. And what happens is that actually there is a physical and an energetic experience of your hands that, you know, were holding both sides where you felt like they were separate, all of a sudden automatically like magic moving together without you having to do anything. It's just as if the polarities of what had pushed these parts apart in the past has been reversed. And now they're naturally gravitating together, and that's for, you know, for people that go through this experience, really an amazing experience of wholeness, and they feel just a much more congruent and much more themselves afterwards.
Well, you say, and I don't think you actually mentioned it, but what I've also often seen, if people have are incapable of speaking about some, sometimes art or some kind of other expression besides speaking helps people access.
Yeah, absolutely. That, you know, and often these suppressed memories get accessed also through touch or through body work. And, you know, I'm writing in this book about also the cellular memory and how traumas can be stored in our cells and how that memory can be reawakened through, you know, these kind of special touches or just something that, you know, dislodges these traumas back to the surface.
But the awakening of this memory, won't that in some cases create flashback and a re-traumatization of the individual? Isn't that why they've been forgotten or repressed?
Well, it does. It does when you are, you know, having, and this is very often that people that have these spontaneous reawakenings of the memories, they actually fall into a panic, and it's a very difficult place for them to be. But if you do actually have a reawakening as you are communicating with your subconscious and learning to really collaborate with it, then, as we talked about, you're able to see these traumatic events from a different angle, from a higher perspective. You know that these traumas and these emotions that are still held in the trauma are not just wounds that need to heal, but they also have a lot of potential. There is a lot of learning opportunity with it. And so when people shift their awareness from, oh, I got hurt and traumatized, now I'm going to be a victim for the rest of my life, to, wow, this event has so much growth potential for me, I can really make a quantum leap. The whole, you know, the whole connection, the whole attitude towards this process has already shifted.
So I really want to get then, I mean, I think you've said it, but I think you have to hear, and of course I recommend reading your book, how you actually access those levels. I mean, going from anxiety to fear to trauma, I mean, anxiety, you know, it's all, the subconscious, you know, what I'm saying, is so deep and in a sense mysterious, and there's so much going on that we, mm-hmm. we observe, and our belief systems form our personality. How do we really get to the bottom of it all? I mean,
right?
Yeah, tell me that.
Well, and I think that's probably a lifelong journey that you and your subconscious will continue to be on. And that's, you know, not something where you just want to limit your connection to your subconscious, your conscious awareness to that deeper part, just for the purpose of getting rid of fear and anxiety. It's really just fear and anxiety being the catalyst for you to make that connection and then really continue to grow and feel that you have this ally. I mean, I consider the subconscious as an inner ally that we have. And that inner ally is it has so many amazing, powerful resources to it, but it also requires conscious guidance. And that's what we often don't understand. You know, the reason why the subconscious seems so disconnected from us is that it continues to repeat the same thing over and over again until we are telling the subconscious, you know, that's not working. We need to do something else. And then it is willing to change if we are addressing that root, why it has been doing these things over and over again. But, in order to do this, we have to learn the language of the subconscious. And the language of the subconscious is not something you find a dictionary about. The language of the subconscious is basically translating your thoughts into images, into feelings, sensations, things that the subconscious can understand. And when you do,
when you do finish, then I have a question. But yeah, when you
well,
do,
basically,
yes.
When you do that,
when you translate into a language it can understand.
When you translate it in a language that the subconscious can understand, and you understand the subconscious sending you its messages through not only the dreams, but also the emotions and sensations and those automatic little thoughts that are bubbling up that are emotionally charged, then there is a connection. Then there is a conversation that has started, a communication that then allows you also not only to listen to what the subconscious is still maybe stuck in or, you know, sees in maybe distorted ways, but also where you can guide the subconscious to a new path of existing and seeing yourself.
Right, so you're saying the conscious mind can guide the subconscious mind.
Yes.
And how
and
does it
versa.
Do that?
Well, you know, and that's basically a lot of what the book is about, learning specific processes and how you can consciously collaborate with the subconscious. I mean, we all heard about and maybe experienced hypnosis, and I'm a hypnotherapist myself, but what hypnosis doesn't necessarily do is to give you a conscious subconscious collaboration. What I think, especially when you're working on yourself, what is more effective to make the subconscious an ally, a conscious ally, is to really learn ways that allow you then to, like we said, you know, for example, with the parts integration, to really communicate with different aspects of you that still may need to be reintegrated. You know, many people that feel anxious feel fragmented. They don't feel whole. And just being able to realize that there are aspects of me that are not bad, that I shouldn't just shove aside, that I actually need to work with and understand and then reintegrate, that in itself is a conscious guidance of the subconscious back into a greater sense of wholeness.
What I think a good example in your book is this woman you call Mary, right? Where she's arguing with those two parts of herself. And
yes.
We have those parts to ourselves. So, but I don't quite get that step where you resolve those two parts, you know? I mean, how it... You
well,
know,
you're not
says,
resolving them. You're just making them work together. Well, let's say you have, just two co-workers that are somehow not getting along. One co-worker says, you know, this person is always just, you know, in their cubicle and investigating and researching. I don't know what this person is doing. The other says, oh, this person is too, you know, gregarious and loud and always talking to others. I don't know what this person is doing. And so you, as the boss, brings them together and you make them realize that whatever they have been doing doesn't have has basically the purpose of whatever the purpose of this this job or whatever the boss of is, You bring them to the same level of purpose, and then you make them realize that they both have intrinsic value and are actually able to help the other side. Let's say concretely, there is a part that's really eager and driven. That's the positive side. And then there is a part that's more anxious and insecure. If you are seeing the values of both sides, the one is more introspective, the one, as I said, is maybe more aware and intuitive, and the other has more drive and courage. Well, if that drive and courage side, that strong side, would be by itself, many people that have a side like this and say, well, if I would miss the counterbalancing part of this introspective side of me, I would probably be a very unpleasant person, maybe really successful, but I would miss depth. And if I only had the side that, you know, is introspective and sensitive, I would probably hide out and I wouldn't be able to do anything in life. And so having the awareness that both sides are actually really necessary to give depth and meaning, but also to be able to go out into the world and create whatever life you want to create, that in itself changes the way these two parts have been relating to each other.
They do. Even the critical part, so if someone has a critical part that they've taken on by developing an inner parent, like you sort of mentioned,
right.
I'm not quite seeing how that is useful.
That critical part?
Yeah.
Well, what is the critical part about? I mean, the critical part is basically the side that is trying preemptively to keep the person, you know, just on its toes and prevent any mistakes from happening. So before anybody else can judge you or reject you, that critical part does it basically, so that you're always in line and always perfect and never make a mistake. So that's a fearful part. That's a part
right.
that is just...
How does that become a benefit to us then? In what way?
Well, the gift of the critical part is that it definitely is very... tenacious. It's a part that can definitely look with great care for any kind of, potential mistakes. And you can, of course, with tenacity also see benefits in, you know, looking tenaciously for opportunities to grow or looking tenaciously for opportunities to have joy. The ability to be that tenacious can be turned around into something positive. But keep in mind, 95% or maybe even more of anxious parts of us are hypersensitive. So there's always the aspect of sensitivity and the fear that comes with, you know, the sensitivity. Once you're able to release that fear, that the sensitivity can be used to your benefit. Even the hypercritical part ultimately is so sensitive because it's afraid of people raising their eyebrows, making some kind of critical remarks, so that it comes in this, you know, or that it basically goes to these desperate measures to protect you through being critical. You know, the gist of
right,
all of it is...
Right, but I don't quite see, and maybe you've said it, or maybe, yeah.
Yeah. Just go ahead.
No, I just don't quite see how, yeah, we have it and may have some benefit, but how we integrate it so we become more productive and less critical and judgmental of ourselves.
What people describe as their experience is that they are more balanced. And what they are realizing is that the part of them that was anxious and protective usually is a part of them that gives them depth. And by no longer having the sense of feeling, this side is my anxious, weak side, that's a side that just causes me trouble, but really reframing it and understanding that that's a side actually that has a potential to give my life more meaning and depth because it looks into these, deeper aspects of life because it's aware, it's, again, has the ability to be, for example, also in relationships, the part that is a good listener, that's a part that is understanding where other people are coming from. That's the gift of this sensitivity that's inherent with our anxious parts. And once you, you know, have more reintegrated the anxious side and you feel just safe in that state of wholeness, that sensitive, quote unquote, anxious side can really support you to have a deeper sense of self and also a deeper sense of life itself. So that's where the balance in life comes in, because people don't feel like, you know, like I talked to a client today who felt he needed to always be busy, 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 because that was a way for him to not feel the anxiety. After the integration now, he feels so comfortable with that balance of doing and being, and he sees the benefit in both, and he doesn't have to outrun his anxiety any longer.
Right. Can you also go through the example of Sam, who had the very abusive father, and so he started to actually hurt himself because he wanted to, I mean, that's a sort of incorporation of the outer father into the inner father, and then it becomes a self-sabotaging way of being, and how you worked with him to access that subconscious.
Right, right. So basically, you know, Sam was definitely a person who has been abused for years by his father, and that stopped when he was 15 or 16 years old, because Sam outgrew his father just with physical strength. But in his mind, that being beaten up, and at times really being beaten up bloody, was still something that was running in his mind. And in his 50s, he still had this image daily of him being beaten up as if he would beat up himself. And he was wondering, is there a part of me that hates me so much that I always have these images of me being beaten to a pulp coming up? And it was very disturbing, and it really stressed him out and created a lot of anxiety. And then when we worked on this parts reintegration and went to the root of where this came from, he remembered that actually he decided when he was maybe 9 or 10 years old, and there was nothing else he could do to somehow make that pain go away, he decided that he just going to imagine that he gets beaten up before he comes home, before his father once again hurts him. What it gave him was a sense of control. It gave him a sense of self, because he was doing it to him in his mind rather than somebody doing it to him. And that really was a survival mechanism. I mean, you can imagine how desperate he must have been. But in that moment, it helped him to keep a sense of self.
Oh, okay. So you're saying in that moment where he decided to take control of his life, as in a sense to give himself power, that got somehow stuck in his subconscious way of being, and just by realizing that he did that, did that release it just by that, or did he have to do something else?
No, that's when we started to communicate then with that part of him that still believed it's necessary for him to do this every day. You know, that's what I mean with the subconscious needing to have guidance. Faithfully, this part of him was continuing this pattern because it believed that's your survival, you know, guarantee. Without doing this, who knows? Maybe, you know, there will be still a father around the corner that's going to beat you up. So once he then was able to communicate this to that part and redirect this part to understand that this part is actually safe, he is an adult, there is nothing for this part to worry, but not just retire this part, but really give him a new job description, as we discussed, that completely stopped. You know, that's where you can see these patterns are not here to stay. These patterns are exhausting, these patterns drain us, these patterns get us, you know, out of sense of harmony. I mean, all those things that the subconscious doesn't want. So the subconscious is more than willing to give up exhausting patterns that are just there to make us survive if we give it good reasons and incentives.
Well, I'm looking at my own life. It wasn't that serious a situation. I mean, I'm just looking how as a child I would have certain projects and create certain things with little soldiers. And I felt like it was always being swept up before I could be complete. And in those playing experiences, I never had a chance to complete. I mean, my parents would come along and, you know, just think it wasn't important. So I feel there's something about not completing things that then I've mm-hmm. incorporated as the inner parent. And so that's a place I feel a little stuck. So, I mean, not, I even realize it consciously, but it doesn't. What do I need to do to get that inner parent out, or that kind of pattern to be right. free from my own mind?
Well, I think there are, you know, different steps that I would recommend. One of them is, of course, to first of all, you know, notice when that part of you that is afraid of completing something, because it sounds to me that completing, you know, doesn't seem to be an option. It's like you get to a certain part or to a certain part in the project, and then there is an anticipation it's going to just be swept away. So there
exactly.
may be a,
yes.
And so there is then this fear of, you know, I will not be able to complete it, which is automatically also a limiting belief. So what I recommend is definitely to counterbalance the thoughts of I cannot complete this by, you know, for example, pointing out things that you are completing on a daily basis and really making this part of you realize, well, this is actually a belief that is no longer based in reality. See here these things that are completed. And then also talk about that you are a choice now whether something gets completed or not. It's not any longer something that's in the hands of others. You can choose whether you want to complete it or not. So these are the messages that, you know, this part of you needs to hear.
Yeah.
And, you know, going through these processes in the book certainly can help. And then ultimately it goes also, you know, this is like the third part of the book, which is about creating a new way of looking at a situation or even looking at yourself. You know, many things that are deeply ingrained kind of distort our identity. They make us look at ourselves in a certain way. And even though we haven't decided it ourselves, we identify ourselves with that. So, you know, in this example that you just mentioned, maybe there is a belief, an aspect of you that you believe, well, I cannot complete anything. Well, that's not really true because, you know, you can complete, you would have completed. That was not something that you have chosen, but you may have taken it on as your belief. And so just being able to realize this is how I looked at myself in the past, and now what do I want to believe about myself instead? I am a master completer, or I can choose whether I want to complete or not. Any kind of those things that you can then have as a statement and then translate it through pictures and sensations into the language of the subconscious, give your subconscious a choice where you can look at the old way of thinking about yourself when you are approaching this moment of completion, or you can look at the new way at looking at yourself, and then you can choose. Your subconscious has then actually two options to choose from and not just one track to fall back into.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, and it seems so deep in there. I mean, I'm trying to look at what would the language of the subconscious be in that way.
Well, in this way, for example, you know, let's say you are thinking about this completion or this lack of completion. You could probably see that there is an image coming up, maybe a memory. Maybe there is a certain body sensation or a feeling that you associate with that.
Yeah.
And then you could, you know, have the statement, this is my belief, I cannot complete, or I'm not allowed to complete anything. And then you choose what other, you know, belief you want to now grow into and focus on. And that belief needs to be then also, you know, having an image of yourself. where you see yourself as that completer. You are having feelings of maybe there is the good satisfaction of having done something. Maybe there is pride with it. So, you know, just having these sensations and feelings accompanying this picture and those words, and then using one of the processes, the Empowerment Accelerator, which is described in the book, to really transfer that new identity and that new belief into your cellular memory, usually within a few weeks, you're going to actually feel much more that that's your default setting than the old way.
Yes, because it seems so. Can you go a brief outline over your empowerment process?
Accelerator?
Yeah, accelerator.
Well, you know, the Empowerment Accelerator is basically a process that is, you know, you could say at the end of going through the book. So, you know, the book is not something that you do want to skip apart. I always recommend people to see the solution not as a light switch, but really much more as a growing process. And the Empowerment Accelerator is something that works really well if your subconscious is ready to let go of the old belief and take on a new belief. See, limiting beliefs are, I think, often misinterpreted as, well, they're little, you know, programs running in your mind and then you just delete them and then you're good. No, limiting beliefs are definitely something that are anchored with emotions and memories and with these parts deeply in the subconscious. So that needs to be addressed to really feel like that, you know, this belief doesn't have any charge and any strong anchors more in your subconscious. Then you're ready to let it go and to change it.
I see. So it's a real process of working through these limitations, and because it is like, because we created these anxieties and fears to learn about who we are on a deeper level.
Yes, like that. Absolutely.
It's the process of our own self-discovery. So they're not just there to be erased. Yeah.
I thank you for saying this, because that's really what I come to believe, because the work that I have been doing with countless clients was really so enlightening for me, because what I realized is this enormous potential inside of us to really grow and shine. And this is not something that, you know, I have or I do to anyone. The shining, that's something that people, you know, have innately within themselves. We are here to really shine the light of who we are into the world. And the anxiety is an enormous catalyst for us to go inward and look for that deeper meaning of ourselves, that connection to our core, the connection to our soul or the light. And the further we are away from that connection, the more anxiety we have. And the closer we are connected to that, the more we find peace and a sense of wholeness and confidence that goes beyond just feeling confident, you know, because of your accomplishments. It's more a sense of self-love and appreciation that emerges. And that's where the real healing and solution resides in.
Right, but the question I also sort of wanted to ask from the beginning, and I wanted to go through the process a little bit, is that we live in a culture that is anxiety and fear producing. Just turn on the television, every commercial is this or that, and worry about this. So, you know, part of our cultural orientation is to live in that place, and maybe that's also you're saying on a small level we must overcome that, maybe on a larger level, we've created the culture to overcome those very same broader views about anxiety, so we can create something new as well. I mean, but
yes,
you know,
that's,
on a,
yes, yes. I mean, I think, you know, as a culture, we are all in the, you know, in the same boat, but I think the people that are remembering the, you know, the truth of themselves can also be then, and I see this in many cases, the catalyst for others to really remember that you're not, you know, your value isn't determined by whatever you consume or whatever you look like or whatever the media tells you you should be. Your intrinsic value is to be who you are, and that's where healing is not just a personal matter. When we are reaching this level of wholeness again and feeling that the anxiety has really guided us to that, then I think we have also a, you know, wonderful opportunity and maybe even a responsibility to share that with others and really give, you know, inspire others to also be themselves. And I hope that's will be a movement, you know, a movement that is disconnecting from that what we are feeling so often trapped in or that's, you know, dictated onto us, and really a movement to living in a much more holistic and in a way that's much more self-fulfilling.
Right. So if people are having anxiety and fear, I mean, I guess that goes back to that same question. We have to look at it and dissect it and realize, in a sense, its purpose in serving us, right?
Right. And also realizing that, you know, the fear is not to be feared. The fear is just actually something to, you know, in many ways to be befriended with and understood and then also transformed into something that leads us to a much greater connection with ourselves. You know, I certainly grew up with a lot of fear. My whole family was afraid, and naturally I became afraid too, and I had my own protective patterns to somehow feel like, you know, I can make it in this world. And when I feel there is an anxiety or a fear coming up, I know that it is really a reminder of that I may have just focused too much on external things or focused too much on things that I thought I need to control and focus too little on actually that internal truth of who I am and who I continue to discover I am. So it is just it's in many ways just this inner messenger that tells you are you on track or not.
So when anxiety comes up for you, what is it that you do specifically? You, like, I guess you outline in the book, but can you just tell us me your process?
Yeah, well, when anxiety comes up, I definitely, you know, for me, has a lot to do with asking myself what I'm trying to control. Because, you know, my survival mechanism was about control. I believed my whole world was out of control. Everybody seemed out of control. So I felt like I need to have plan B, which never really existed. But that was my level of, you know, empowerment to have some idea of control. So I ask myself, what am I trying to control? What am I trying to force to happen? And by doing so, I give my power away. You know, my power away means like I make something bigger and more important than myself in that moment. Reaching a goal or agenda is more important than my inner peace, and I start to identify myself with that goal or agenda. So that's one thing. Then I also ask myself whether I really am out of balance because I didn't take care of myself. You know, was I neglecting my needs? Did I not allow myself to rest enough? Or did I maybe, and this is in my work, so, you know, certainly something to be mindful about, did I take other people's energy or emotions on? You know, we do that, especially if we're sensitive. There are these, you know, sponge tendencies that many of us have where you feel anxious and you wonder, is it actually my anxiety or is it somebody else's anxiety? And then there is this leaving your center, you know, do I leave my center by, you know, thinking too much about the what if reality in the future, or maybe, you know, I did something that I knew isn't really good for me, and I still did it, be, you know, despite my better knowing or my better beliefs, you know,
well,
where.
What do you do about that then, huh?
Well, you learn about it. You're not doing it anymore afterwards. Well, it's like one of those things where, you know, for me, it's often that I'm overgiving and overdoing. That's just a tendency I do have. And when I realize that I have been overscheduling myself, I try to fit too many people in because, you know, I don't want to, you know, have people stay too long in their anxiety. But at the same time, I'm not respecting my own needs, you know, to have time out or to rejuvenate. Then I know that I have left my center. So the book has like a whole little checklist that I think is very applicable for most of people's anxieties. That checklist is especially valuable once you have addressed those, you know, root causes, the blueprint of anxiety that you have brought with you from the past. You know, once that is gone, once you have addressed that and you really feel centered and anchored within, that doesn't mean that you will never have anxiety. Anxiety is a natural emotion that just comes up and tries to tell you something. Going through this checklist will help you to understand what the anxiety possibly can tell you or wants to tell you.
Don't you think we ever can't we overcome that anxiety ever?
You mean like never ever having anxiety? I'm still here.
No, I didn't hear you for a second. No, I think at some point, don't we come to a place of security and confidence where we sort of, we're on top of it in a way, right?
Yes, absolutely. And that's, you know, that doesn't mean that you will not have anxiety ever again. I mean, the idea of, oh, you know, once you go through the fear and anxiety solution, you will just forget about anxiety. That's like saying, well, I will never have physical pain again, and I'm so much better off with that. No, physical pain is a very important part of, you know, us staying healthy and whole. Without physical pain, we would overlook certain things that need to be addressed. So same with anxiety. If your anxiety is coming up, there is a reason. You just know now from that more centered place how to address it, and you're not feeling like, you know, washed away with it, like a tidal wave that just, you know, basically makes you feel, again, small and lost in the midst of these emotions. That's what most people at the beginning feel.
Right. I was just looking at it from a sort of enlightened place where maybe there are people who've achieved a sense of peace and wholeness and security and awareness where they're not brought down by those, you know, human emotions anymore because they've overcome that. Is that possible? You don't really.
Well, I haven't talked to the, you know, Dalai Lama yet, but I'm sure it's possible for some people. But, you know, I also read that he has to meditate every day for 4 hours. So maybe there is something that, you know, can be achieved. I don't mind to have the human experience. You know, I'm here to be a human and I want to have the full on experience. So I also like to have my emotions. I just want to understand the emotions and utilize them.
Well, I'm just using, in a sense, your understanding in the sense that anxiety is just like something created by the mind. And when we start to really understand our minds or be more in touch, maybe, and of course it's hypothetical, we come to a place where we've don't need to have those experiences anymore. I don't know.
And certainly not as frequent and certainly not as intense. It may be just a little tinge. You know, I think the more you're aware of yourself, the more your awareness is also fine-tuned. So, you know, often when people get into anxiety and they talk about, they say, you know, I really got an awareness of my anxiety when I couldn't sleep anymore. Or I really got an awareness of my anxiety when my body started to hurt. So there was an anxiety there all along, but it needed to really knock so strongly at their door of awareness that basically the physical body got involved. So when you are more in tune with yourself and more aware, you may have a little thought that is signaling you that what you need to express. There may be a little twinge somewhere and you know, ah, that's the sign that I haven't really been in balance, or that I have, you know, taken something personally, or that I have given my power away. And so that, you know, the intensity may be much, much less, so less that you may not even call it anxiety anymore. But still, there will be a continuous communication with that subconscious that is just so much more aware of what's going on around you than your conscious mind can ever be.
Right. So all our emotions are a way of, are the awareness bridges these gaps between the conscious mind and the subconscious mind. This
yes.
is really what you're here to show us. And, you know, I see your next book in a way, I don't know if you're planning a next book, but just starting from that place of empowerment, you know, and going forward into, you know, the core self-awareness and becoming, you know, the great consciousness where, in a sense, we're almost unified with the subconscious. We almost transcend a kind of personal ego identification where we become an expression of the totality. I mean, I know I'm jumping
well, no, you're
out
doing
there a little
actually
bit, but
quite
I
something.
See that's where this book is leading, yeah.
Well, you're doing great because you are my confirmation. I was actually a little struggling between two book ideas for the next book, and my heart is much more in that what you just described. So you either can read my mind, or you were just meant to say this to me to get
no,
really clear about
it. No, I was also saying
what
I think. One of the things, if your heart's in it, then that's a sign of, in a way, the subconscious to overrule the ideas and conditions that the conscious mind thinks it has. And the heart connection is, in a way, the doorway to our subconscious motivation. It may not make sense to the logical mind. And that's, you know, so this is where we're going. So I wasn't actually speaking to confirm. I was speaking because it felt like in going through the book, that was where you were leading people.
Yeah.
And maybe some subconscious part of you were leading us there.
Exactly. Well, it's definitely something that I feel is, you know, missing.
Oh,
in
so
many
go
ways.
For it.
I will. I'll send you a copy.
Definitely, Sam. We'll do another interview about that as well.
Oh, excellent. Thank you. So, I'm looking forward to it.
Me too, because I think, you know, you have something very essential here. And in a way, it's very spiritually minded, but it's taking the raw emotions of existence, because my theory is that we really don't exist in the physical world. We exist in this mental, emotional reality. And you're using the elements of that to evolve our consciousness to the place of self-realization. Mm-hmm. So that's what the value of this work, I feel, really is. And you can quote me on that.
I will. Thank you. And, you know, I'm totally with you there also in regards to what we know. And it's always mind-boggling to me, but what we know about, you know, the relationship between energy and matter, and that basically, you know, 99% of us or more is actually energy and not matter. And just realizing that emotions are energy, thoughts are energy. And so just also thinking about when we are able to really align our emotions and our thoughts and our beliefs with really who we are and with our potential, there's literally, you know, no obstacle that can be in our way. Also, when it comes to healing, when it comes to physical healing, and of course also emotional healing. So it's definitely something that I feel we need to more and more investigate and more, you know, utilize as ways for us to heal and to all, of course, grow.
Yeah, I like that idea that emotions are energy, or they call it emotion, you know, emotion,
yes.
Energy in motion. And so if something is not flowing in us, we're not letting the energy move through us somehow. There's something like that. And we could dance about it or sing about it. The release of energy frees us to feel. I think that's what I'm getting at here. So,
yeah, and you know, and anxiety is such a, you know, it's such a powerful energy. It's such a powerful emotion that suppressing it and just trying to, you know, basically not feel it is certainly something that, you know, brings up some kind of resistance to it. And many people that, you know, I have been working with come to me on medication and come to me on the realization that suppressing the emotion only shifted this energy into other areas of their life. You know, maybe they started a physical issue, or as I said, maybe they have these behavioral issues, or they cannot fall asleep anymore. So we cannot ignore such a powerful force inside of us. We just have to really learn to work with it, understand it better, and not be afraid of it.
Right. No, I think that's really key, because I think it's the key to our evolution. We're here to feel. We're here to allow these feelings, and with our conscious mind to realize it so we can all move forward. And I think you have a key here for the next level of consciousness, in a sense. So thank you for putting that in there.
Thank you. And you know, one of the things about the book is it is, and you know, maybe this is one of those books that you cannot really just read on the way to work, you know, for 5 minutes and then put down, because it is really a journey that this book sends you on. And it was for me the intention for everyone having access to that, what I have found, you know, to really be powerful and working in the last decade. And so take your time with the book, you know, really work through the chapters and realize that every chapter in itself gives you already some kind of tool and insight, and also positive change in regards to healing and understanding the fear and anxiety you've been struggling with. It may take you 6 weeks, it may take you 3 months to go through all of it, but if you do this, you're really seeing it's a building block. It's really creating a new foundation of self, a foundation that can also then really hold your further growth. And that's what most people that have been dealing with fear and anxiety are struggling with. They don't have a strong foundation of security and safety within themselves and in the world. And that is part of what the book is focusing on.
Right. So the book we're talking about is The Fear and Anxiety Solution by Friedman Schwab, S-C-H-A-U-B, and published by Sounds True, out of Boulder, Colorado. Where are you located, Friedman?
Well, currently I'm in France, but the location is in Seattle, Washington.
Oh, where in France are you?
Southern France, in the, you know, maybe an hour from Avignon.
Oh, really? I'm going there. I'm going to Papignon and down that way.
Nice.
Are you going to be around there in this summer?
Yes, I will. I will. Send me an email. Come by.
All right. Maybe. What town are you actually near down there?
You know, I don't know if you know, Apt is a town nearby. It's not very far from Marseille. It's about 45 minutes north of Marseille.
Okay. I think I know where you are. So you treat people there? Is that it?
Yes. I work with people via Skype and the phone, so basically it doesn't really matter where I am.
So all over the world. So what's a website that people can get in touch with you?
The Fear and Anxiety Solution.com, or also CellularWisdom.com.
Cellular Wisdom. Maybe we'll do a program on that next time too, the Cellular Wisdom.
I would
wisdom.
Love that.
All right. And then are you French originally or German?
German.
Are you German? but you are living in France.
I'm a Francophobe, yes, definitely someone who loved France all his life. I grew up very close to the French border, so it felt like, second home to me.
So it's your home now, right?
Well, right now we are kind of vacillating between, being in the U.S. and being in France. But the long-term plan is probably to stay in France.
Oh, where are you when you're in the U.S.?
Seattle.
Oh, you're in Seattle. That's how you connected with Sounds True.
Okay. Right.
Well, if you're ever in New York, let me know.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. And again, the invitation stands. You just send me an email or call, and would be happy to drink a glass of rosé with you.
Okay, I'm there. No, I think I'll be there the end. Thank you. I'll be there the end of the summer. I'll let you know. But I've enjoyed the conversation because, you know what, I do this program so I could learn about myself. And if other people.
Well, I thought it was very inspirational that you shared about, these childhood struggles. So thank you very much for doing that and making also then this whole integration and the other processes more tangible through your example.
Yeah, I think the examples are really something, because we just talk abstractly, then people don't. We need the details to identify, with ourselves. So anyway, I like to put myself in there and see what, how I can become more integrated in myself as well.
Right.
So if I visit you, maybe we'll do a TV thing as well, possibly.
Oh, that would be fabulous. That would be fabulous. So is this is not a live show, obviously.
I think it is live. I think it's live, but no, we're still recording. But I also on every Tuesday on BBS Radio Live, so they'll play this show tomorrow, 7 p.m. Pacific Coast Time, 10 p.m. But it'll also be archived, and I'll send you the link to the archive, okay?
Great. Well, thank you very much.
Okay. Schwab, you say your last name? Schwab?
Schaup with a B. Schaup.
Schaup. Friedman Schaup.
Schaup. Yes.
Schaup.
Schaup.
MBPhD, SCHAUB, MBPhD, The Fear and Anxiety Solution by Sounds True. I recommend it if you really want to get to the source of transformation. And we'll do a show on the molecular side of it, because I think there's stuff even on a cellular level that we can talk about.
That would be great. I would love that.
Yeah, because I've had conversations with Bruce Lipton. Are you aware of his work?
Yeah, of course. Yes, yes.
Yeah, so he's quite a genius in understanding the cellular, the biology of belief, I guess, is his key
way
of work. So,
and there's a lot of truth to it, yeah.
Yes, yes. So we'll do more. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Have a good evening.
Yes, I will.
Or afternoon.
Whatever. Yes, it's a beautiful time of beginning of summer here. So, okay, I will talk to you soon. I'll just wrap up saying thanks to everyone there at BBS Radio. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. If you want to hear this series, you can also go to my website at newrealities.com or email me with questions, ideas, suggestions for upcoming guests at newrealities@earthlink.net. Thanks for listening.